listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor, at gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again William Engdahl. It's been way too long since we've had William on the show. He's been on a number of times in the past. For those of you who may not be familiar with him, he is an award-winning geopolitical analyst, strategic risk consultant, author, professor, and lecturer. And after earning a degree in politics from Princeton University and graduate study in comparative economics at Stockholm University, he worked as an economist and investigative freelance journalist in New York and Europe. And he's written a number of books that have really attracted my attention. And I have found, you know, if you're looking for objective truth, you've got to look outside of the mainstream sometimes. I don't care what country you live in. The media is increasingly, at least in the United States, in my view, increasingly basically propaganda for the establishment. And so it's really a breath of fresh air to have people like William Engdahl available. Thanks for joining me again, William.
Thank you, Jay. I'm happy to be with you again. Sorry for the technical problems that I couldn't get by in time, but I hope this works.
Well, you're here in time. It's just fine, and I'm really glad you sound really good. So good old-fashioned telephone seems to work anyway, right? So sometimes I think the lower technologies are better. But anyway, I've titled today's show, Why Dollar Hegemony May Be Nearing Its End. And I know you and I have talked about this in the past, the competing pressures, geopolitical pressures globally that are taking place. That, you know, there are people, countries, and rising economic powers that are sick and tired of having a what I believe is a fraudulent currency, a currency that's created out of thin air, used and then enforced by military efforts around the world to force people to use that currency. I mean, it's just like a mafia don that would be creating money in his basement and then forcing everybody at the point of a gun in his neighborhood to use his dollars for things he wants to take from them. So I want to refer to an article that you wrote. And by the way, I'd like to tell my listeners again, just to remind them, it's williamengdahl.com, and that's spelled E-N-G-D-A-H-L, williamengdahl.com. That's lots of great articles there, geopolitical, economic articles that I think are very worthwhile reading. And I'd like to refer to one that you wrote, William, on February 9th, titled Europe's Energy Geopolitics is Getting Dicey. You start out by saying Europe's... talk to us a little bit about that. I'll just let you go on and tell our listeners about that. What's going on? I know that oil and energy has played such a part. I mean, the dollar was made viable with Kissinger making an agreement with Saudi Arabia, the petrodollar, because we required oil to be sold around the world in dollars, that providing a bid under the dollar. But there's a lot of changes going on now geopolitically and in the markets for energy. Talk to us a little bit about your February 9th article.
The whole field of oil and gas, where so many wars have been fought over the last 100 years, really, is the fulcrum, I would say, or the pivot point of Anglo-American geopolitics for the last century. And control of oil, as Kissinger said back in the 70s, is really the point. Control of oil, and now, I would say, in the last decade, control of natural gas, because natural gas, with the carbon footprint debate and so forth, no matter whether you accept the logic of the IPCC or not, I don't personally, but that leads to real political decisions by real governments in the European Union and other countries. So natural gas has become a major player in this game as well. And what we're discovering, if we look at it closely, is this peak oil debate that was so popular around the time of the U.S. invasion of Iraq 2003 and so forth, one might question whether that was a little bit suspicious, given that Dick Cheney was vice president and George W. Bush was an oil man from his head to his toes. The world is not running out of hydrocarbons. It's running into hydrocarbons, oil and gas. And the most fascinating and probably the most explosive new discoveries in the hydrocarbons have come since 2010, when a Texas oil company called Noble Energy discovered one of the biggest gas fields in the world in the last decade, called Leviathan, in the Israeli exclusive economic zone offshore waters in the direction of Cyprus. And the Lebanon has also an offshore economic zone, and they are disputing that zone with Israel. They filed claims with the United Nations Law on the Sea Convention before. Israel's not even a member of that. But be that as it may, then there's the question of Cyprus. And the European Union is trying to play all this. I talk about the European Union as the Brussels bureaucracy, which is a globalist, supranational, unelected entity that has no interest in the well-being of citizens of the European countries, but of this globalist agenda. Mm-hmm. So the European Union has come on record as favoring the import of natural gas from Egypt's Leviathan field through Cyprus into Greece and into the European Union to replace the Russian gas. And then there's so many conflicts here, it's kind of boggles the mind. You have one natural gas supplier to the European Union, which since the 1970s has never once reneged on their agreement with the EU, and that, or the European Economic Commission community back then, and that's called Russia, or the Soviet Union back then. And even the 2009 Ukraine business was the corrupt Ukrainian government, under orders from Washington, trying to create an incident to have an argument against Russian gas imports in favor of much more expensive gas from other sources. So now Donald Trump, I really have difficulty calling him President Trump. Donald Trump came to Poland back last July and promoted U.S. shale gas as an alternative to Russian gas for the European Union. And Poland, foolish that they are, just built a billion-dollar LNG, liquefied natural gas terminal, to take gas from the United States that will cost 50% more for the Polish economy than Russian gas.
Wow.
And, you know, this is just the beginning of this. And then you have the EU Commissioner for Energy endorsing Israel as a source of gas for the EU. And Israel hasn't even resolved its territorial disputes, not only with Lebanon, but with Cyprus, which is an EU member state. So the whole situation is a bloody mess. But it all boils down to the geopolitics that the deep state, which runs policy today in Washington, I don't think very many people would dispute that anymore. The deep state in Washington and the European Union are agreed on the idea that at all costs, a natural alliance between the economies of Germany, Italy, France, and so forth, all of whose industry dearly would love to have the sanctions lifted against Russia. They do not want a war. They don't want a third world war against Russia in the last 100 years. You know, Europe is finished with this. But this is the game that you know, the generals around the president are stirring up and trying to create. And I think it all goes back to the idea that there's a certain hegemonic superpower that is collapsing dramatically and doesn't want to admit that the emperor has no clothes. And that is the United States and the elites that have thought the United States, I'm talking about the late David Rockefeller, but his successors, George Soros, Bill Gates, the Bush family mafia, and so forth, that these power interests think that the United States is their kind of cotton plantation, and that they can do with Americans what they will. They can send them to war to get butchered and slaughtered, or send their drones and get proxy wars like in Syria, and all this to create enrichment for their vast holdings. And I think the American public is getting a little bit bored and tired of these silly wars everywhere.
Well, the American public is no doubt getting tired of these silly wars, as you call them. But it seems to me, William, that economics eventually will come to play. I remember during the Cold War when, you know, at least the free market people that I knew were convinced that there was not necessarily a need to go up against the Soviet Union and to compete against them militarily, because they would implode from inside. In fact, I know President Eisenhower talked about how most nations self-destruct from inside rather than being attacked from outside. I mean, major powers, anyway, that's true. Little countries get taken over all the time. So now we have a budget deficit. Mr. Trump's budget, they're saying, is going to cost us, we're going to have a $1 trillion deficit next year, maybe at $1.2 trillion. And the dollar is coming under some strain right now. I think you make the point that at least, you know, say what you want about China and whatever their way of life is and their government philosophy and so forth, or Russia. The point is, these countries are not threatening the territorial space of other countries. I mean, Americans think that Russia took over. But we are, and those countries are basically building, and they're growing economically. They're becoming economically strong, whereas I would argue, notwithstanding the propaganda from the economic folks in Washington, that we are getting weaker and more vulnerable all the time because of this enormous amount of indebtedness. And then we have to have military powers to force people to keep using the dollar. The dollar is getting weaker anyway. So how does this play out? I mean, here we see all these things. I find it really interesting that the Australians, which have been really close friends of the United States, even they are telling us that they're going to have to make some very difficult decisions in the future with regard to China. The Chinese, if they want to sell their products into the Chinese markets, and they do, of course. But are they going to continue to provide bases for the United States to go in and try to control this? You know, as the U.S. doesn't let China control its own sea lanes, we don't want them to. We're trying to stop them from that.
I guess
it's just, how's this going to play out? Is it going to be the United States? To me, William, we can't stop. The United States can't stop its aggression. It's an animal. It's like a wounded animal that you talk about Rockefeller and these guys, but basically, I think that the entity, the big, you know, these big bureaucracies, they want to feed themselves. They want to keep their gravy train going, right? So, to me, it's just a matter of time before Mother Nature takes over, essentially, and stops it. How do you see it?
I very much agree with you, Jay, and the idea that I talk about this at the final chapter of my book, The Gods of Money, Wall Street and the Death of the American Century, that the sole superpower, or in previous times we would call it the American Empire, the British Empire, the Dutch Empire, whatever, the Roman Empire, all were destroyed from within. And that's what we see in America today. The personal levels of debt, the college indebtedness, the automobile indebtedness, the household indebtedness, the corporate indebtedness, the Wall Street stock bubble because of QE 1, 2, 3, ad infinitum and all these manipulations, that's
right.
not a healthy economy. That's a destruction from within. And the fact that we have had more conflicts reaching a pre-war threshold since the election of the current president is an indication of the deep state that is kind of behind that guy. Many of your listeners may not believe this, but this guy would not have even come out of his bathroom in One Trump Tower to get close to the White House unless he had heavy, heavy deep state backing, because they mm-hmm. find him useful. Henry Kissinger has gone on record finding Donald Trump very useful for Kissinger's agenda, and that's the Rockefeller one world government agenda. This is not conspiracy theory or muckety-muck. This is really documentable facts about how power works.
Yeah, and I might just add that Kissinger was one of the first people to visit Trump after he was elected. So Kissinger is obviously very close.
And Kissinger also went to Xi Jinping and to Putin in that same year. This incredibly enduring geopolitical operator. And I have the impression there's a grand design behind all of this that is trying to deceive Russia, trying to deceive China, and get the U.S. to play into certain of the weaknesses of both countries. And if it will succeed or not, going back to your question, it's very difficult to say right now. Very difficult.
Yeah.
I think
mm-hmm.
the U.S. stock market, going back to the financial side of things, the new tax bill of the Trump administration, this is a catastrophe for the fiscal soundness of the American economy and the U.S. government. Deficits of $1 trillion, $10 trillion added conservatively over the next decade. This, debts do, at the end of the day, do matter. This is nonsense to say debts don't matter. Mm-hmm. So, American households, if they're choking in debt and can't pay it, and the interest rates start rising because the Fed has to at some point, correct. This whole thing is teetering on the brink of a stock market meltdown. The stock market is as phony a bubble as you could ever imagine in human history.
Yeah, I agree.
The tulip bubble or the South Sea bubble or any of those pale by comparisons. By the way, I don't think blockchain is a bubble. It may have bubbled at the end of last year for short term reasons, but. I think the real bubble is the U.S. bond market, the U.S. stock market, and the mm-hmm. whole financial edifice of debt mm-hmm. in America. And that's scary.
Well, let me just ask you, though, on this issue of Kissinger and the coziness with Trump and how Trump is probably really an insider, even though, what we hear all the time in the U.S., you have, Fox on the one hand, and then you have all the sort of left-leaning channels on the other side, just fighting each other all the time over Trump. And I'm wondering, do you think this is just sort of a sideshow or something that's meant, in a sense, at least it serves a purpose, of distracting people from what the real issues are? In other words, it almost makes it look as if we have a real democracy, as if we have real openness here and we have a real debate, when in fact that just sort of obscures what's really going on.
I remember back in the 80s, there was this debate between a Republican and a Democrat on television, and they would take completely opposite stands. I can't remember the name of the program. Novak and I forget.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and that was theater pure. And, you have these contrived, they were best of friends, but you have these contrived cat fights going on all the time with Trump and his tweets and whatnot. And what the effect that has is keeping people stirred up, keeping people angry, either you're pro-Trump or you're against Trump or whatever, you're pro allowing the statue of Robert E. Lee to stand because he was whatever, or you're against having the statue of Robert E. Lee, and you're pro this and against that, and so everybody is stirred up in issues that are not fundamental to the fundamental issues of the future of the nation called the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very useful for the people who want to gently steer the thing into a war military agenda and kind of a total top-down control of the population. And that, I'm about to publish a new book within the next 5 weeks, called Manifest Destiny, Democracy as a Cognitive Dissonance. And in the book, I describe the creation by Bill Casey and the CIA back in the 80s under Reagan, and the refinement of that under every president since that, right up until Donald Trump in the present, of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, financed quietly by the U.S. government, the National Endowment for Democracy, Freedom House, International Republican Institute of John McCain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, George Soros's foundations, working closely with them, to create fake democracies all over the world that are part of this U.S.-controlled globalization, this Wall Street-controlled globalization. And this project, which had been about 10 years ago quite successful and looked like an alternative to these costly military wars, is becoming a complete catastrophe because the world is waking up. The world is no longer buying this nonsense. In Hungary, you have this vicious Soros campaign against Viktor Orban, the prime minister, and I wager to bet in March when the elections in Hungary take place for the Hungarian new government, Orban is going to win a landslide victory because he said Hungary has a right to its national sovereignty, no matter what the unelected bureaucrats in Brussels say.
All right, William, we're going to have to leave it go at that. William, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it go at that. We're out of time. We'll have you back again sometime soon. I'm very sorry, but folks, go to williamengdahl.com, williamengdahl.com. Partake of this man's insights. It's free of charge. You can go there. Please do yourself a favor and do that.
There's also a newsletter free of charge that they can get.
All right. Okay. Well, avail yourself to that, folks. That's really very important. We do have to go now. Next week, David Stockman will be with us, and he'll no doubt pick up on a lot of the things that William Engdahl had to say about the financial condition in the United States. All right. So we do have to go now, folks. Until next week, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Bonterra Resources, a Canadian exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. In 2017, Bonterra raised $40 million and attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kinross, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based VanEck Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource model in 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000-plus meters of drilling where the dimensions of the Gladiator gold deposit has been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under BONXF.